Welcome, guys, to episode 6 of the Hexperts Battletech podcast. This week, our episode is Let's Talk About Mechs, Baby, brackets, What is a Battle Mech? Which is taking us quite a while to get to this point, to be honest. I don't know why it's taken us this long. But this week...
It's because you've been suffering from the plague.
Oh, yeah, I've been suffering from the plague. But even not 6 episodes to get to this point, it's probably longer than I thought it would be. But yeah, as you probably gathered, there's not just me here today. Tonight, we have all of the hosts at this point. We'll see how long they last. So we've got myself, Lewis, talking. I'm recovering from the plague. And we've got Tom over there.
Selah!
We've got Nathan.
I'm here.
And we've got the sleepiest guy in the whole of Battletech. Oh, no. Not again. Not again.
Oh, I was only messing. See you, Hex Week.
No, not yet. Are you on the full fat Dr. Peppers now, Dom?
No, I'm on the zero.
Oh, no. It's a bad sign already.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, so before we get to our main segment, let's have a little talk about some hobby progress and some of the news. But hobby progress for myself, not a lot because I've been away and I've been ill, but I have painted up a Firestarter and a Rifleman 3C or a 3CR, depending on what mood you're in my mercenary colours. I'm looking forward to using them at some point. And over to Tom. Tom, what have you been up to?
Whoa, Lewis, thank you so much. I've actually been doing too much hobby. So much that one might say I've gone to infinity and beyond. That's just a segue to talk about. I bought a load of infinity stuff this week because I am a hobby butterfly. And can't stop myself. But Battletech-wise, sorry, what was that, Lewis?
I say, I've seen some pictures of Battle Mechs.
Oh, well, there are, yeah. So this is, I've had a bit of time off work, and so I've been kind of badgering away. So first off, we'll talk about it a bit later, but I've been doing some mechs for the Davian NAIS Research Lance, or whatever they're called, like the NAIS training cadre who get given all the wacky gear, because obviously the new book came out for April Fools, but it's actually a TRO and it's real, so I'm putting some of the mechs together for that with some of the other stuff.
It's real.
It's real. She's real to me.
You've been painting some yellow mechs.
Just like the lamp.
No, green.
Ooh.
Yeah, so green for Davian NAIS. God, that's a mouthful. And then I have taken on a little bit of a side project. So friend of the show, or actually enemy of the show, Mike, decided to pick up the Fassa Sorensen Sabres book a little while back and make that mech company. So I said, cool, that sounds great. Went home and found that Rolling Thunder, who are the first Hesperus guards or someone like that, also have one. So I've just picked up all that stuff. So I've been trying to get an orange colour going. To some mixed results, but I think I've got it down now. But yeah, I'm doing a whole company of Rolling Thunder, which is cool. In the actual mix, and with some battle damage, which we probably will post photos up of, because I've sent them into the group chat.
Cool.
You can see my little thingies on some damaged mechs that I've butchered.
I'll be there for the fingers.
My fingies. Any games, Tom?
Well, Lewis, isn't that in the games played?
Well, didn't realize we had hobby. It's hobby progress. Oh. It's both. It's hobby progress slash games played.
You can tell that I've not done this for a week because I've forgotten the format of the show. Yes, I've been playing many games of Battletech. Huh. I've been teching battles and playing as Op4 for local people because, I'll be honest, my Morlons Marauders are doing so well. It's a little bit unfair to play people sometimes. So we've been playing Op4, which means I get to use some of my more out there mechs. You know, I ran a Gotterdammerung last week just to see if it was any good. It's cool. It's a big Thunderbolt.
Yes, we like the Thunderbolt.
That's me. That's me, unfortunately. I've only done about 25 mechs worth of progress. A bunch of Infinity.
That's not much, is it?
Not good enough. Slacking. Well, Nathan, can you redeem?
I can redeem it by saying that Battletech Roy's for painting, I've done none.
Wow, no.
I've actually been somewhat sorting out all of my hobby stuff. mainly just the Italian stuff that I've got for Bolt Action, as I'm going to the Welsh Open coming soonish. But yeah, other than that, I've been playing a bunch of games, and I have been added into the Parlour Show. I've now got a Kodiak, I've got a Direwolf, is it? The big mad cat guy, or looking guy.
I can't see him, Nathan.
I think he is a Direwolf. Masakaru?
No,
yeah, Masakaru.
Like a Deshoi or whatever it is.
Daishi. Yeah,
there's a Direwolf.
Yeah. And then I got an Ula, which I love a good Ula.
Ooh la la.
Yeah, ooh la la.
So, game wise, I've been playing mainly just Hinterling games. No.
Yeah.
I'm not dying, which is great.
I've also realized
big flaw in the system is once you win two games in a row, money just becomes like nothing.
Yeah.
And
that's what it's like for us as well, running a Battletech podcast. Money is basically
exactly. Yeah. I mean, we're like
wealthy beyond belief.
I'm not sure that's quite correct.
I mean, I don't know if you're embezzling all the podcast funds, but I'm not wealthy beyond belief. I'm not so wealthy, very much in belief. Everyone can believe how not wealthy I am.
Don't
got a money mindset.
Dom did ask for my credit card and the last three digits on the back. I was wondering about that.
But Lewis, that was to save Star Captain Nikolai Malthus.
gotta save him from a liar in jail.
You gotta save Alexander Kerensky so that he can come back to the inner sphere. All he needs is the expiry date. The numbers on the front and the three wacky numbers on the back.
Yeah, so if you guys could send that to us,
yeah,
we'll name. That's a joke. Just want to be clear.
You can send us as many C bills as you want.
Yeah,
yeah. Please don't.
Yeah,
but yeah. And then even today, I had the best form of Battletech game, which is Clan versus Clan.
Ooh.
And I was playing under the podcast Billy with his Steel Vipers. Yeah,
they're some kind of snaky guys.
And in 3 hours, we got through four turns.
Yeah.
To be fair, pretty good.
Some snaps. We're going to play the rest of it another time. But yeah, that is me, done and dusted. What about Dom?
Well, I've got something written down for Dom, so we'll see if he's done any more than he did last time I spoke to him.
Okay, so let's address the elephant in the room. Yes, I fell asleep during the last episode. No, it wasn't because I was bored. I was just very tired and jet-lagged. So I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sure you missed my dulcet tones. Anyway, what have I been up to? I have been playing a cool video game called War Robots Frontiers.
I do like that game.
Sort of a battle mech, 6v6, objective-based, let's say like, heavily inspired by the MechWarrior franchise, to say the least. Would you say that's fair, guys?
There's some similarities there, you could say.
Yeah, so I've been playing that. I also have been painting a little bit of Marvel Crisis Protocol, which, you know, it's not Battletech, but it's something. I painted the knee of Domino from the X-Men.
Just the knee.
Just the knee. Let's not go too overboard. Painted the knee. And then I also rimmed the base as well. So,
you did what to the base?
I rimmed the base.
Oh.
Painted the knee.
Painting the knee and rimmed the base. That's not something I'd thought I'd hear tonight.
No, but, you know, it's just because I've been pretty tired. But I'm looking to maybe get back into the swing of hobbying, let's put it that way, the painting side, the building side. I'm in a bit of a hobby slump, so I'm hoping that this episode this week reinvigorates me and rejuvenates my
Well, no, this is what he said last time before he fell asleep.
Those like the doomed words.
Did you choose a faction from the podcast from last week, Dom, that you were interested in, or were you still undecided?
You know, here's the thing, Lewis. They're all so good.
That means he's forgotten that we didn't listen.
It's hard to pick one. Oh, so cool.
That means he hasn't listened.
No, I'm taking the approach of the majority of the BattleTech community in that I hate BattleTech Gothic, and it's an abomination and needs to be killed. So that's my sincere belief.
You could, if you think that dumb, that's perfectly fine.
Good. Cool. I hope that's clear for everyone.
Okay. Well, I'm guessing we're not going to see Dan Payton any of that up. But yeah.
Why?
But if that is that all your hobby wrapped up there, Dom?
That's all of my hobby wrapped up for this week, Lewis.
Super duper. Well, let's move on to the news. Well, the news this week's a little bit quieter than it was last time. Obviously, one of the things that came out near the start of the month of April is the April Fools kind of thing from Catalyst, which was the RISC, or the Republic Institute of Strategic Combat, TRO. Which was full of a bunch of experimental mechs, including some, what you call them, tripods, and mechs with some crazy tech that I don't even know how it works. And I don't know if you guys have had a little look through that book at all. I quite like the look of the some of the artwork in there, some like the Excalibur, and I wouldn't mind trying some of the mechs like the Emperor from that book. Would you guys, have you had a quick look at that yet, or any of those mechs that you want to try out, or artwork?
Have a look at the tripods. Tripods seem pretty funky, to be fair.
Yeah,
but
Nathan keeps talking about his tripod.
The
all of that third leg.
The armor diagram from the tripod is quite odd. But yeah, apart from
that, certainly a choice.
Yeah, anyone else like anything from the book, or anything you're keen to try out? And you mentioned something, Tom.
Oh, Lewis, I hate it so much. I have purchased and started painting every single one that I can get my grubby hands on. So everyone bar the Wendigo and the Mad Cat and the Excalibur, which I say everyone but, and then I kind of list three. So about half of them that I've managed to get my hands on. I'm painting as NAIS dudes, and then I'm also painting up some other variants that are either NAIS specific or RISC specific as well. They're really cool. I bought the alternate eras. What's it called? Campaign Ops, Interstellar Ops, sorry. These book names, Randall, please make easy book names. It confuses me.
I don't think it's up to Randall specifically.
First you take his family, and now you take his vocabulary. It's terrible, Randall. Bring them both back, please.
Yeah, so we are... I'm looking at them. They look really cool. The Hyperlasers look really cool. The repeating T-Semp looks like it's going to be no fun for anyone.
Yeah, can't imagine that being popular.
So,
wait, is the T-Semp the mech taser?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a battle mech taser. It's better than one. But repeating T-Semp can fire every turn rather than every other turn.
What?
So, yeah, T-Semp repeating cannons can fire every turn. Yeah, when I say that it's, like, nasty, this is what I mean.
You're currently, like,
all the other enemy mechs look like a raclette, isn't it?
A bunch of cheese.
It'll really help you scrape off those layers of armor while they're down.
Yeah.
This means nothing to anyone that wasn't in the pre-podcast.
That's true.
This got cool, so...
Yeah, so you're keen on them anyway, Tom?
Yeah, they're super cool, and it gives me a reason to use the new NAIS decals that I bought.
Oh, super duper. But yeah, so that's pretty much it on that. We obviously have we'll date the podcast, obviously, is there's been a little bit more of talks of tariffs going on recently. I'm sure Tom has got nothing to say about this at all.
Fuck! This is just bad. It's just bad. I was going to come onto the podcast and say everyone in the UK should buy from Fortress Miniatures and Games, because I just have, and it's relatively cheap, like relatively quick, and they're super good guys. They sent UPS tracked. I got the new Davian lances, the Black Remnant Command lance, some set strikers, and a bunch of Piranha graphics decals. So I was going to go and tell everyone, all five of our listeners, to buy from Fortress. But, unfortunately, with the tariffs, I don't know how that's going to be affected.
Yeah.
So, word to the wise, keep your eyes and ears peeled. See if it really affects shipping. If it doesn't, Fortress is great. It cost me about £20 in postage, which I know is about a force pack, but their force packs are about £20 rather than the 30 we're used to.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Did I forget one of the mechs and add a Flamberger instead?
No, they didn't actually. They sent me everything and a neoprene beer holster, which is branded. It's very cool. I'll send a picture of it in the podcast and we can actually put it in the Instagram as well because it's super cool. But they sent it to me free of charge, holding all of my decals.
A Stein holder, considering it's from Germany.
No, it's from Fortress Miniatures and Games in America.
Whatever.
Hence why I brought it up in the American thing.
Extra large Pepsi holder, considering.
Potentially, but it's made for beer. So I will say this is bad.
Seems like a bit of a poor beer holder if it's only holding stencils. You know, it's only holding transfers.
True.
True.
Yeah, I'll be honest, this is pretty rough. Expect things to go up in price. And the UK is usually pretty low on the list of getting stuff. Oceania is the only place that gets stuff lighter than us. It's going to get worse, is the only thing I can say. This is bad. Obviously, no one that plays Battletech, unless Donald Trump, you play Battletech and you listen to this podcast, sort your share, man.
Yeah, and yeah. I just like to point out, we're not sponsored by Fortress, although if they would like to sponsor us, we are.
I would love to. Please sponsor me, Fortress.
Tom,
so cool.
We need some more. We need more cup holders, whatever they were.
100%.
But yeah, so, and obviously with the tariffs, if you can grab stuff now before things go a bit crazy, grab it. Otherwise, you might find that you'd be spending a little bit more if you hold out.
Yeah, it's not great. I understand that this is hobby, so. As always, just make sure you get your personal this is such a weird thing to say in a hobby podcast, but like, don't
put hobby first.
Don't put hobby first. Yeah, just make sure your personal finances are all sorted. And we're not the people to talk to you about
this.
This is not financial advice. This is no. This is okay. Very specifically, due to UK rules, this is not financial advice. We're not experts. We are
don't
experts,
listen to us.
But we are experts on your money. So. Do whatever.
I think you should buy 30 of mech lambs.
No, that is advice. Follow that.
Yeah, that'll do for tariffs anyway. Let's talk about something that's interesting and fun. UK Games Expo's coming up the end of May, start of June.
So there's some are there some sexy gentlemen that are going to
be
there?
Yeah, some sexy gentlemen. Some of the experts will be there. Myself and Tom are going to be there. We're going to be in the, what do you call it, the events hall. We're going to be doing some paid events. So if you'd like to, obviously, you'll probably see more as this comes out. I think there's going to be some interesting stuff coming up and you might be able to play some things before it's released. If you don't get to try anything new, I'm going to put Tom on the kissing booth. I think Aces is definitely there.
Yep. Aces is definitely there, and we'll see what's going on. Obviously, it's unfortunate that Catalyst have officially said that they're not going to be present at UK Games Expo.
Sag.
Whilst this is a disappointment, the Catalyst demo team, which Lewis and I are a part of, is present, and we are running events due to just some stuff going on with how it's been set up. Yeah. They're all ticketed events. So they're called Fire On Demand ticketed events. So if you do want to meet us for some reason, I don't know why you would, or actually play Battletech, go onto the UK Games Expo website where there's some ticketed events up. There's Drafted for War, which is you get 3 mechs and then you fight them against three other mechs that someone else has.
That one's definitely good value. I think it's like...
Yes, £20 for 3 mechs.
Yeah, so it's like cheaper...
And they're new mercenaries.
Yeah,
so
it's I think it's one of the only places you can get it unless you go to a store that was a Kickstarter backer. So it's a good and a good price as well, £20.
Aces is going to be there, so if you want to have a look at the Aces box, I don't know if anything actually. Like, I think we're going to be looking at the rules and sort of doing a couple of scenarios. I say we, Lewis. So that'll be super cool, and then. There is also going to be, if you do want to try out the Mercenaries campaign after listening to us jabber on about how cool it is, but you don't have a local group or your local group is not cool and they don't want to play Mercenaries, I think I'm running a scale one mercenaries campaign on the Saturday. It's one contract, 3 months, three missions, and just bring down, I mean, it's on the thing, bring down 3,000 BV of mechs, so sort of two mechs equaling 3,000 BV together, and then go through a three-month contract and fight against a couple of different people. We'll all be there and having a great time. But definitely come and see us, and then, you know, have a great time.
Yeah, and
just enjoy yourselves. Enjoy UK Games Expo because it's so cool.
Yeah, just make
so.
When is this? It's the
30th of May.
30th of May. Is it the early June?
1st of June? 1st, 2nd of June?
Yeah. Just to make it clear as well, we are not in charge of running it, so don't worry about it. It's not going to be a shit show because we've run it. We're just there to help out.
Are you suggesting that we can't run things, Lewis?
Lewis. Yeah.
I'm not liking how you're saying it's not going to be a shit show because we are running it. Making it sound like you think it's going to be a shit show.
I did not say that at all. I was saying if I was left in charge of it, it wouldn't go to probably the plan. But yeah, that's that. Obviously, the stuff's posted up. If you've got any questions, obviously we might be able to answer them, or I'm sure you can ask questions. But you buy the tickets as well. But yeah, that's the expo. After that, we need to start talking about events. We have some, I think we're looking at running. I need to start actually putting down dates, and Tom keeps telling me off and not booking any. So I'll let you guys know when as are coming. But also, if you guys have any events coming up, let us know and we can talk about them.
We might even go to one if it's...
I don't think anyone wants us turning up.
No, it was more just tell us what cool events are on and we'll turn up.
Cool.
Uninvited.
Yeah.
Not to the event, your house, but...
Yeah.
That was supposed to be a surprise, but I feel like I should clarify it.
It will be. Cool. We'll be to the house. Yeah.
Cool. So other than that, that's all the news, and we'll catch you guys in a couple of minutes. Well, it won't be a couple of minutes for you, but a couple of minutes for us. On the other side of the break, and we're going to be talking about our main segment about what a mech is, or what is it? What's it called? Let's talk about mechs, baby. Catch you guys on the flip side.
Let's talk about mechs, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about mechs.
Okay, I've got a mech for us. Okay.
Go on, Dom.
It's the Direwolf.
The Direwolf.
It's cool. It's a Daishi, yeah.
What do you think of the Direwolf?
This isn't really the section we're talking about, the Direwolf. It's pretty cool, though.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Is this to do with that Direwolf meme that's going around?
It's coming back.
Okay. Well, we could talk about Direwolf in another episode, Dom.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll get on to the Direwolf on episode 278 when we finally get to
the clan invasion. Yeah.
the what, Lewis?
The Daishi.
Who does what to where?
What?
Do we need to do the of mechs and men thing where we just randomly
bleep
out clan stuff, even though everyone already knows the clans are there?
We're
Brent, Aaron,
all you out.
Don't stop it. It's cool stuff.
Yeah,
because obviously you guys listen to our podcast. They listen to us.
Yeah, obviously
they're always listening.
I really like one of you. The other one. Ooh. So, trying to figure out which one I don't like. No, I'm joking. I like both of you.
So anyway, let's get back into our main segment, which is let's talk about mechs. So we need to talk about what a battle mech is. But before we talk about what a battle mech is, let's talk about what was going on before there was battle mechs. So basically, before there was battle mechs, there was pretty much conventional kind of combined arms war. Think tanks, planes, boats, obviously space war. So we've got drop ships, jump ships, and infantry. Well, that would be the case until 2350 in the Terran of Gemini in Zimbabwe, when the Myoma was developed by Dr. Gregory Atlas and his team. They got the first working Myoma. Myoma basically being like an artificial kind of biochemical muscle. It's similar to what we use for moving our skeletons around. One of the first rigs they used was the Schwarzenegger Bicep, which destroyed its mountains and flung the test weights into the sky. Yes. No relation, obviously, to any Californian mayors.
I need to make my armors.
Get to the drop ship.
Get to the leopard class.
I wonder if his estate.
Tom sounds like Jafar from Aladdin.
I wonder if his estate got any royalties for that. This MIMO was first used with industrial mechs, obviously with completing construction, where vehicles which had tracks or wheels couldn't get to, such as up the side of cliffs and hills. Also, having these muscles meant that the mechs could have arms that moved up and down, which meant they could do some interesting things. Later, Dr.
Talking sort of synthetic replications of muscle, right?
Yeah.
This isn't biotech.
There is some bioengineering to it. Like there is some like organic tech to it, but it's mostly like an artificial kind of like a reproduction of a muscle. And obviously on a mech, it's going to be quite a bit larger than something that you have like on a person. We'll come back to it a little bit more in the actual section about Myman and structure.
Yeah. So you're in the BattleTech universe, right?
Yeah.
So you're like a soldier in the BattleTech universe.
I'm there.
You're there. You get a leg, an arm, another appendage blown off.
Yeah.
Can they replace that appendage with a facsimile of the human muscle?
No, they can't.
They eventually.
Yeah, okay, eventually they can.
Yeah, but like until the 30-20s. Maybe in the Starleague era, but until the 20s, that was the first time. Recorded, they could replace someone's arm in the case.
I think
I'm talking about.
It's actually a big part of the Warrior trilogy.
Doesn't Kai's dad have an arm with Mimer in it?
Justin Zhang.
Yeah. He's
or Justin Allard Liao.
Yes.
If you want to.
Yeah, he has a man scale Mimer arm. These arms are quite a bit stronger than the standard equivalent.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't
replace both of your arms with powerful Mima arms and just be a stronger person.
Like, unfortunately,
dominate.
Unfortunately, that's not actually something you can do. I think there are some gene crafting that some like death commandos or very specific military units get done to them. But as far as I'm aware, replacement bionics is prohibitively expensive up until the Helm Memory Core is refound. So I would actually say it's probably a Star League thing that was lost, because one of the first things to go when you're retooling workshops is, you know, the facsimiles of human limbs, if you can then make it into a battle mech. So
cool.
It's one of those ones.
But yeah, anyway, as with all things, Dr. Atlas's award-winning work would secretly be put into working into making military technology and military mechs, and which would then be where the battle mech is born, which we'll talk a little bit more about some of these first battle mechs later. But the first, a battle mech, as we like to see, is usually between 8 to 40 meters tall, the majority being bipedal, but there can be tripods, Nathan's favorite, or quads, usually range between 20 to 100 tons, the most, but obviously there are exceptions to that, but the majority we see are that size range. And they usually have a mech warrior or a pilot who controls them. They give the, basically having a mech means you've got a lot more flexibility on the battlefield than something like a more conventional vehicle. Because as we talked about,
I'm still trying to understand the conversion between meter and feet, because I'm British and can't figure that out in my brain immediately. So how tall are we talking in feet?
What, did you guys know the conversion of meters?
Wow, I'm gonna go to.
Do you wanna Google that while I'm just finishing this section up, Tom?
Yeah, how many meters 15, are they? Sorry,
eight to 14 meters.
Oh, eight. No, but, so they are. Da, 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 da. they're 26 to 45 feet. So they are, they're kind of like 4 to 7 times the height of a man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not that I'm saying a man has to be 6 feet, but that's sort of the...
No, but in the textbook, we don't accept anyone below 6 feet. Just because everyone here is...
This is true. Nathan, he's 7 feet 7.
But he's also 9 foot wide.
Nathan has played basketball for the LA Lakers. Let's just clear that up.
Yeah. Nathan is LeBron James.
Cool. But yeah, so as I was saying, having this ability to move around, have arms and legs, means that the mechs can traverse in lots of different terrain. They can go underwater, in vacuums, and as we also mentioned, having hands can be quite useful when trying to complete objectives such as picking things up or smashing things up. But yeah, that's pretty...
Are there underwater battles in
Oh, yes, there are. And
aquatic fights.
They are destructive.
Yeah, gameplay-wise, they're destructive, and I think lore-wise, they're pretty destructive because... I think once water starts getting into the mechs, Mima doesn't, I don't think it likes to get wet. So,
well, I'll talk about Mima in a bit, and it definitely doesn't like to get wet.
Yeah. But yeah, so they can fight. We can be fighting mechs in space or underwater. Game wise, we've learned quite recently that even a little bit of underwater is absolutely devastating for mechs.
Terrible. Just losing arms and legs left and right.
Because nothing's waterproofed. So it's kind of like if you open the case to your PC and then got a fire hose and just blasted it in there.
Nathan, it sounds like you're talking from experience. Have you been trying to water cool your PC again?
Damn it, you caught me. I'm actually recording off a Walkman at the moment.
We've got him again, boys. But yeah.
Nathan's PC is full of a bag of shampoo.
But yeah, so that's kind of like a quick overview of a mech. Let's have a little talk about some of the key components that they're made of. I'm going to pass across to Tom, because I've been talking too much.
Thank you, Lewis. I, too, like the sound of my own voice. Structure in Myanmar. Now, a mech structure varies, but usually ranges between 16 to 25 structural bones that allow articulation and let the mech move its arms and legs. Similar, but not to the same extent as a person. So battle mechs move very kind of similarly to the, what are they called, the Jaegers in Pacific Rim. They're it varies from source to source, but sometimes they're a little bit more Gundam-y, where they're very kind of doing kick flips and shit, and other times they are a little bit more walking tank. So I think the guys, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the modern interpretation is closer to a Pacific Rim style. There is some kind of dexterity there, but it is a little bit lumbering.
Yeah, I think that's probably like a fair comparison. Like,
some have been known to do combat rolls and stuff.
Yeah, sweep the legs. So
roly polies.
These chassis are often made of aluminium core, covered with various composite materials, wrapped in silicon carbide fibers. And then you've got some titanium alloyed steel on top. You've got loads. Nathan, you're the engineer here. It's all that crap that I don't really know about.
Yeah, basically, I'd say that it's pretty much a battle mech chassis is like, what do you call that stuff? It's not Kinex. What's the metal stuff? It's not
Technics?
Not Technics. I have to look it up. It's like basically like a...
It's a Meccano.
Yeah, Meccano. That's it, Meccano, exactly. I always think of a Battletech chassis like being Meccano. Yeah.
So if we've got Meccano, how do we move? And that's how Myanmar's work. Now, Myanmar bundles, Mr. Atlas, Gregory Atlas, did a really cool thing and went, well, humans are pretty cool. What if we took muscles? And he went, oh, so he made some artificial muscles.
Gregory Atlas.
Yeah.
Right. As in like Atlas, as in like the bodybuilding competition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I never realised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, also the these guys at Catalyst Game Labs are pretty smart.
This was FASA.
So I think
whoever they are,
I think project is Operation Muscle Bound. I think or something like that as well.
Yeah, it is actually Operation Muscle Bound. Yeah, he has his muscles. Muscles. They're growing bigger, and these muscles are made by combining some tech
fancy bioengineered bacteria in tech.
Yeah, so they just actually they're microscopic polyacetylene tubes filled with actistradular fibers. I don't know what this means. I only did an A level in chemistry.
Nathan's told me all about his microtubes.
But the long and short of it is, they work like human muscles. These bacteria bind with polymers, and then they create chains, which, when you send an electric current through them, cause the fibers to rearrange themselves into complex nanostructures, similar to how muscles work. Right? We don't need to know this. It's some kind of like sciencey shit that allows battle mechs to move. Gonna be honest, if you want to look into it, I'm sure someone with a biology degree can tell me why this doesn't work. I don't know enough to tell you if this is guff or not, but
it's got lots of big words.
Yeah, it's enough for me to go, that sounds about right. But then I don't know how a Kearney Fushida drive works either. So, long story short, muscles over a skeleton makes it go.
Yeah,
but it's also why battle mechs do not like getting wet, because water dampens their ability to conduct electricity in a controlled way.
Yeah, and it's also why some of the mechs, if you do start playing, why they can't do a complete flip around with a lot of their torsos and muscles unless they've got technology that lets them do that, because like yourself, your muscles don't let you twist your whole body around the whole way. Well, I can't talk for Nathan. I've seen him turn around.
Yeah, I was about to say, maybe you can't twist your entire body around, but me, I'm out here doing exorcist shit.
That's the kind of like training day when Denzel Washington asks, "Did you know you like to get wet?" The mechs are like, "No, I don't like to get wet."
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? I know for a fact that no one else in this podcast room right now, the room that we're all in together, tiny 4x4 room, has actually watched Training Day.
I've not watched it, but yeah,
I will say that the mechs do also make impressions of sounds as well. They do sound impressions as well, just like Training Day.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
But
two films.
Just to come back, I'd like to, best way to probably think about it is Meccano with little muscles attached so far on the mech. This is where we've got to anyway.
and this is why you listen to the Hexperts, because we bring the most hottest takes.
Exactly.
Riveting.
But yeah, anything more to add to the structure and the Mimer, Tom?
Lewis, thank you for letting me say no. Actually, I don't.
Okay.
I'll be honest, there's some cool stuff, but a lot of Battletech is this sort of granularity. It's cool, and we'll talk about it, but man, it's just word salad sometimes, which like it's no crap to the FASA guys, because they did a really good job of it, but I don't have a degree in this stuff. I don't know how it works.
It sounds plausible, and it kind of makes sense. Let's just have that suspension of disbelief and go along with it.
I think that's kind of what I'd just say. Let's suspend your disbelief.
Talking about fantasy space magic muscles, let's move on to something that still is a bit of a fantasy power source. Let's talk about fusion engines with Nathan.
So yeah, fusion engines. If you've got a car, a toaster, a plane, or a battle mech that you want to go places, use a fusion engine to power it. So these are the most common form of power used for most vehicles in the Battletech universe. Some still can use steam and coal, but unlike every other kind of energy generation, this one isn't a steam one, which is great. But yeah, in the Battletech universe, fusion technology was first achieved in 2021. That's right. They're keeping it in a basement somewhere, and they haven't told us about it.
Oh, so we already have it.
We must already have it. It's secret.
It's what's powering the world at the moment.
Oh, good.
But yeah, we actually do have it in real life. I believe it was France that managed to get it working for 30 seconds, which, you know,
not bad.
One of the only good things I've done.
Yeah, melt cheese onto bread.
Tom would know about that.
Yeah. To be fair, guys, the French, they're keeping it just to make raclette.
Yeah. They're just going to have like a little fusion, a massive like building size fusion engine attached to a little raclette machine.
This is really riveting for people that aren't in on the joke.
These are the best kind of jokes, the ones that no one else.
Well, I bet they're not Ricoletti and clicking on this video.
Oh dear. But yeah,
Nathan, finish the damn section.
Never. But yeah, it's surprisingly accurate for a bunch of people who probably stoned off their faces in the '80s, coming up with lore about big fighty robots. But yeah, over the centuries, this started to improve, making the engine smaller, lighter, but some battle mechs still have bigger, heavier engines that protrude into other parts of the body that everyone who plays Battletech absolutely loves, especially when you lose one of your side torsos and your mech fall apart.
I don't know what you're talking about. We did.
Costing XL fusion engines.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, fusion engines in the universe are like all they need is a few kilograms of the hydrogen isotope tritium, which is also known as a light hydrogen isotope. They don't use the heavier ones like tritium, they use protrium. Sorry about that.
I knew the difference. I was just about to interrupt you between the difference between protium and like.
Well, imagine it like this: the lightest element known to man. Instead of using the heavy lightest element known to man, they use the lightest element known to man.
This makes sense to me.
Dance floor when he's just boogieing across.
But yeah, they only need like a kilogram of hydrogen to work for a decade, which is quite like efficient. But while it is really efficient, they can output a hell of a lot of heat, which if you've ever sat in a car after it's been nice and sunny outside, you'll know that sucks, especially when you try and put your seatbelt on and burn your fingers.
Well, no, because we're from England and we haven't seen the sun since 1990.
We saw the sun last week for a little bit. It came out for about 5 minutes.
Yep, and then went behind the nice grey curtains that is our skies.
Yep, exactly. And do you have nuclear power in Battletech? So obviously they're all fusion engines. Mm-hmm. When I hear fusion, I think nuclear. Do we have that in this universe or not?
Well, this is what a fusion engine is, nuclear.
Oh, right. Okay.
The fusing of the hydrogen atoms to harness the energy from.
I suppose they're probably not using the nuclear fission reactors that you're thinking of, Dom, because they've got fusion and it's a lot more efficient.
So, yeah, it's confirmed. Hank Simpson is out of a job in the Battletech universe.
And also, probably, I think it also, it doesn't explode from what I heard.
No, I've heard it produces a shockwave that goes out and then makes other things explode, but the fusion reactor itself, nope, doesn't explode. But yeah, as I was saying, it can output a lot of heat.
Yeah.
Even moving starts generating heat. But you've also got to think about running all the different systems that it's got on the mech, and also shooting weapons, especially the laser weapons, which take a lot of energy to charge up and fire.
Yeah.
And trying to hurl 100 ton of mech and their pilots at another person.
Cool.
But yeah, how do we deal with this heat, you might ask? Well, we're actually going to cover that after the next segment that we got going on.
Cool.
But yeah, that's all you need to know about fusion technology.
Cool.
In a battle mech for now.
That's pretty cool. I mean, they do have I suppose petrol and diesel equivalent engines as well. It's not just coal and steam and fusion engines.
Well,
there are other things in between.
Yes, there are internal combustion engines, which industrial mechs and some shit battle mechs do actually use.
But the fusion engine, if you can get it, obviously a lot more efficient and can kick out a lot more power.
Someone standing like behind a rifleman shoveling coal into like the butt port of it.
We've got to be careful. Got to be careful around the back of a rifleman. If he hits it with his spade, it'd blow up. But like Nathan said, we're just going to pop to a break and we'll come back with our next segment. So we'll catch you guys.
Your tech or law tech?
Oh yeah, baby. We'll catch you guys on your tech or law tech in a minute. Catch you on the flip side. And we're back with LoreTech or YoreTech or the other way around, YoreTech or LoreTech. I'm sure Nathan will correct me.
Yep. Welcome back to LoreTech or YoreTech. Now, this week, I'm actually going to bring one in. Lewis isn't going to be doing all the heavy lifting in this segment.
Lewis always heavy lifts.
I'm always lifting. Does. They call me the liftiest man in Battletech.
We call him Lewis Lifts a lot.
His arms are so thick.
They're like two toddlers attached to his torso. It's weird.
Poor two hairy oak trees.
Oh,
okay. let's stop talking about my girthy arms.
Like two fat dash arms attached to
what the fuck did that come from? But yeah. So Nathan, what law have you got for us, Nathan?
This week I bring you a tale from not the first but the second war of succession.
Ooh.
Mainly to do with the Capellans. So,
this can be fun.
It is. It very much is. So, this concerns Lorelli Leo, who was at the time the Chancellor of the Capellan Federation. So, she was known in her time to go around to the different battlefields and actually fight with her men, which everyone was like, hell yeah, I'm so inspired by this. However, it did lead to her dying on the battlefield, which is the second time a chancellor's ever did that, which was in 86. But what isn't known is that there's a little nugget of lore that 2 years before that, on one of these visits to St. Ives, she was doing a normal thing, fighting with her men, when suddenly, bam, Davian ambush. Now, her company gets wiped out. They managed to take out everyone except for one mech, and she obviously calls for aid, but he won't be here for a minute. So what does she do? Well, to survive against this enemy mech, she runs around a skyscraper dodging the mech's attacks, and for an hour has to circle a skyscraper avoiding this mech shots, which actually saved her life as reinforcements did come to help her. And well, she went on to live for another 2 years. So yeah, what do you guys think? Was that a LoreTech or a YoreTech?
This is silly enough to be a LoreTech.
I think this seems to be too elaborate to be made up, Nathan. So I think this is LoreTech.
What do you think, Dom? The opposite approach, where I feel like he's literally sat there for the past 30 to 40 seconds writing that down.
Oh, absolutely.
He's been getting so hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you been watching Nathan's special camera again?
Nathan's top down camera next to his mirror.
The cock cam.
Nathan's been burning that midnight oil.
That's not the camera I was talking about.
So two LoreTechs and one YoreTech. Now, which one of us is correct?
So you guys believe that a emperor of a Chinese-related civilization ran around a pear-shaped object for multiple hours avoiding an assassin? Well, you're being correct. It's actually a YoreTech.
Oh, he got us.
The wall over your eyes. How do you feel about it?
I feel like a silly boy.
I'm now just a bit concerned that you, at such short notice, came up with what possessed you to...
Well, I got reminded of a tale of an actual Chinese emperor who managed to survive an assassination attempt by running around a pillar in his throne room for, I think, 10 hours until the assassin got tired and just ran away.
Okay, I didn't know about this.
Scooby-Doo.
It is the most Scooby-Doo thing possible, but it did happen.
The Empress Skibidi.
The Empress Skibidi? What?
That's for our Gen Z and Alpha audience. That's who that's for.
Chicken Jockey!
Oh, no.
well done on your absolute deception. Mm-hmm. I was hooked and thought, that's something that Fassa would do. because that's silly. So,
but yeah, Zheng of Qin, the first emperor of the Chinese Qin dynasty, survived an assassination attempt by running around a pillar.
Well, yeah, okay. You know what? History. Like the podcast,
yeah.
Not sponsored, just
not sponsored.
Not sponsored. We just listen to it. I do at least.
Okay.
So yeah, this has been Lore Tech or Your Tech. Remember, if you've got any ones that you want to send in, you can send them to the email that's linked down below, because I don't think two of them will actually check, see if there's any of them.
I can't read.
Or you can go to Instagram, go to find me under Estellan and send me in a message. And if they're funny, and I think it'll fool them, I'll use them. But yeah, until next time, this has been Lore Tech or Your Tech.
Cool.
Whoa. Yeah, and if we don't use your suggestion, it's because it's not funny.
It's because it's bad.
Just to be clear, it's not funny.
Okay. We'll pop back to a break, guys, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Welcome back, guys. Back to our main segment. And we're going to be leading with Nathan talking about heat sinks.
So, yeah, we're talking about the heat sinks, which is obviously what used to sink all the heat that juicy, juicy fusion engine has been producing. So, what are heat sinks? Well, modern day, we do have heat sinks in computers, which obviously absorbs the heat from all the working components, which is pretty much what they do in the BattleTech universe. It's same as, like, how do I put this? Battle mechs are water-cooled like computers. They have their own little radiators, and they have an entire system that goes around pumping cool oil throughout the mech and keeping it from either killing the pilot or from killing all the ammunition and making it explode. Or as someone might say, shockwave out from a certain position.
So Nathan, I thought the next primary purpose was to kill.
Yeah, but not themselves.
Also, just you probably need to explain to Dom that the coolant's not meant for just throwing at children. It's also meant for cooling the mech.
Yeah, while the bottles of coolant that they do get do have a don't spill on children warning on the front, because it's so prevalent of it happening. You're not actually supposed to do it. But, yeah, for the most part, they use stuff, use heavy oils like hydrocarbons to, like, keep everything cool, because it's got a really high boiling point, which means that it, you know, doesn't evaporate when you try and make a mech run, like, 10 feet, and then it just, heats up the mech to an insane amount. But, yeah, these are made out of thermally conductive oriented graphite.
Fancy.
Which, what you get in pencils.
Yeah, but if they got all of the different chemical, like all the different structures in it, and made them all point in a way, which apparently makes them 5 times more thermally conductive than copper.
According to who?
According to FASA, or according to the people trying to sell you heat sinks.
Right, okay. Yeah. So this is like
big heatsink.
This is sort of the science fiction side, isn't it? So this is this is really when you watch Star Trek and Geordi LaForge is messing around with the warp drive and you can't understand a word he's saying, right? This is all just kind of
but at the same time, I mean, yeah, but in modern day settings, anyway, we've got coolant that goes around in a car or in like a different vehicle to keep everything cool, like the radiator on your on your car engine. There's a radiator, keep it nice and cool, hopefully, so your car doesn't explode. But then we've also got stuff like carbon fiber, which is just graphite oriented in a way to make it stronger. But it's just in this case, it's keep things nice and cool.
Okay.
So as for the most part, in 3025, you'll only ever see heat sinks that are classed as single heat sinks. So in-game, these absorb 1 point of heat. In the lore, they can deal with a certain amount of heat before needing supplementary heat sinks to then treat it. But in the past, a long, long time ago, in a galaxy not that far away, this is Sign 1, they had double heat sinks, wow, which, as the name might suggest, could do double as much as a single heat sink, which would therefore allow you to fire a lot more weapons and or keep a lot more space in your mech for the weapons that you want to fire with your increased heat capacity.
Right. So, but, yeah, for example, a mech warrior game, like mech warrior ones, when you had all of your lasers on your mech, you were jammed full of heat sinks, so you could fire them all at once without cooking yourself, right, basically.
Yeah, and then you also had like a automatic shutdown or a shutdown warning, which could be turned off if you're a mech warrior that actually has parables, like some which like, oh, keep the shutdown on, keep the auto eject on. Yeah, nah, come on.
I think
shots, be a real shots, man. Shots are being, die,
shots being
die.
Fired, shots are being fired here at me, I think.
Exactly. What's the point of a mech warrior if he's got no mech?
Yeah, but so pretty much as they said, keeps your mech cool.
Yeah. For the most part, there's two like the heat sinks will either be dotted around the body, usually in the torso area where it's more protected, so they don't just get exploded. But there's also those which are present in the engine that come with the engine. So it, in game terms, if you look at your little record sheet, it'll be like, oh yeah, you got 22 points of heat while only having maybe 10, like 8 or 10 that are actually able to be damaged on the sheet itself and be able to be taken out of the game. But yeah, that pretty much covers all of the heat sinks. Any questions?
Mainly for me, when you do cook in, let's say, like mech warrior clans, what is happening to the pilot inside? Is he just like sweating? Is he?
He's extremely warm. Like, okay, he's like at the point of heat exhaustion warm. And
in game, probably, can your mech pilot like pass out because of all the heat? Can he just like
feel
the wilt? There's like optional rules for like your pilot starting to pass out or take actual physical damage, and they can even die if they get too hot.
For the most part, though, it just thinks that you have the automatic heat shutdown on, so it's like you have to roll to see if your mech just stops working as it tries to cool down all the systems.
Right, there's a fail safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we'll probably get on to we'll talk about this maybe a bit more in depth later on. But mech warriors, when they fight, are just in their underwear. Literally just in boxer shorts. And if they're lucky, or in the right time period, they also have cooling vests, which act as little baby heat sinks for the mech pilot themselves, allowing them to stay conscious while the room starts melting around them.
Yes. So this is something I've just heard, Dave. I think every single time you've referenced sort of mech pilots, you've specifically called them out as men. Are there just not any women mech pilots?
Oh, no, there is quite a lot. I was just saying that they're just in their underwear, in the kegs. Like, female mech pilots will just be in a, like, you know, bra and pants.
Honestly, to be fair,
he said that by the sounds of things.
I think I'd just be in board shorts the whole time, like just swim shorts.
Yeah, with the
neck. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. I think also they're talking the lore about the smell in the cockpits is very unique. I think it's probably something similar to some of the war game stores that we visit when you go in.
Have you ever been to like Warhammer World on a 40k event day? If so, you'll know the smell.
Yeah, inside the 200 years of sweaty man inside is what the mechs can smell like inside. Yeah, cool. Anything more to add to heat sinks or any other questions?
Doesn't sound like it. So if that's done, we will then move on to Tom with the armor.
Well, we can talk about gyros first.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
God, Nathan, we shouldn't let you be in charge of the order. I've even got it written down.
I can't read.
Well, that is true.
We're a really cool podcast, and we definitely always know what we're doing.
I need to,
because we are experts.
I need to put pictures of people's faces next to which one's going next. But yeah, so before we talk about Armour of Time, let's have a little talk about gyros and the neuro helmets in the mechs. The mechs, basically, they're, as we talked about, bipedal, or they can be tripods or quads. But what stops them just falling over? I'm pretty sure you've seen some of those robots, like the Boston Dynamics or some of the other robots. It's quite actually hard to stand up and stay standing up. So what?
I saw the Kaisen out and tried to push one over.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's probably the equivalent of that happening to the mechs at this time period. Yeah. But yeah.
Because the thing is as well, those robots, they probably remember, don't they?
That's what I always that's what I always worry about. But yeah.
Do you think when they were inventing them, they just had like a guy with a big stick prodding the mechs?
I'm sure that
every time they stood up, just bonk.
they probably do.
I have to take out the emotions chip, because I think of Data from Star Trek when I think of robots. Did they take out the emotions chip, or have they deactivated it? Is there going to be a point where the Boston Dynamics robots have to get pushed around too much?
The whole problem is that Data fucks and Boston Dynamics robot doesn't. So,
hey, I think you'll find that in 2025 we will be having sex with robots. I saw an article that's very credible.
let's get back to gyroscopes with battle mechs. So yeah, the actual gyroscopes themselves, they're a collection of accelerometers and standard gyroscopes. They basically use to kind of show where the mech's center of gravity is and distinguish where the direction of where it's kind of direction, especially in low G or space. As well as that, mech warriors wear neuro helmets. They're probably not as like crazy technological as you think they might be. They're more used to kind of link up with a mech warrior to use their own sense of balance to help balance the mech, because however well the gyros kind of work balancing and have kind of show where the center of gravity is, as soon as the mechs start doing some kind of crazy maneuvers, running about, or as soon as bits start getting blown off, the mechs, obviously their balance is going to get thrown off. Whereas without the pilot, the mechs don't know about this and they might try and rebalance and end up overbalancing themselves and falling over. Whereas with the balance of the pilot thrown into the mix as well, it means the mechs can have these things happening as well as staying upright.
So is there like haptic feedback for the pilots? Do they feel the kind of pain of the mechs? Do they feel basically their little mech toes on the ground effectively?
I'll skip a bit, and obviously we'll talk about that. Everyone they've asked about it, but the neuro helmets, the ones we kind of see at 3025 are a bit more basic. They're pretty much kind of literally kind of just helping out with the balance. But some of the more advanced ones that we saw a bit further back in the past and maybe in the future, some of the SLDF ones, for example, they give a bit more of that feedback. So there's talk about like them actually being able to shut off the glass on the mechs, because they can actually use the feedback from the neuro helmets to let them know what's going on outside of the cockpit. Or also the mechs with some of these more advanced neuro helmets can do stuff like have a better control of their hands. So they're not just grabbing something, crushing it and picking it up. They might have some better articulation. There's also some talk about, because of the kind of things that the newer helmet lets the mech do, it lets the pilot do things like sidestepping, and there's even talk about handstands, but I think that's more kind of like a not something you do in the heat of battle. It's just the fact that some people can do things like handstands or rolls once they're kind of dialed in properly and they've got the kind of right tech for the newer helmets. The kind of stuff we're seeing now probably wouldn't let you do that, but with the right mech warriors and the right kind of tech, that some of the mechs can move around a bit more like a human and less like a robot, if you will.
Is there like a mech equivalent of like the Harlem Globetrotters? Like, is there like a group of mech pilots that are just like so cool and they can do it for like loads of fancy tricks because they're so in sync with their mechs? Is there like a...
I think some of the more kind of like legendary mech warriors are known to pull off some proper proper maneuvers that people didn't think was possible with mechs. As we're talking about, like the kind of, what do you call it, the Pacific Rim kind of mechs, like the better the pilot is, the more kind of interesting stuff they do, but the kind of newer they are, and the less kind of powerful the technology they've got, the more kind of cumbersome and slow they are, and what they're not able and are to do. But yeah, but additional to that, the mech gyros, they're able to assist with mechs if they're starting to fall. They've got what they're called, like, they're likened apparently to reaction wheels, but they're not reaction wheels, where the gyros spin, and if the mech's starting to lose balance, they can basically stop and grab, and then they can kind of push back onto the mech to kind of help it keep its balance. This is also one of the reasons that if the mechs start taking damage on the gyros, they can start to do a lot of damage inside the mech as well, because these big wheels, when they start falling apart at the speeds they're spinning, they can start destroying the inside of the mechs. But yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to it, being a gyro, but pretty much the kind of the basics of it is that the gyro and the neuro helmet keeps the mech standing up and trying to, and basically helps them balance. If this stuff isn't working so well, or if you've got like an older neuro helmet, like a more basic one, then the mechs aren't going to move as well. They're more likely to fall over. There is a lot more about neuro helmets we can talk about, but that could be probably like a whole episode in itself. But that's pretty much the kind of the bare bones of it anyway. But you guys have got any more questions about the kind of gyros and neuro helmets?
No.
No? Cool.
No, I think you've pretty much summed it up.
Cool. That's fine. Lastly, let's have a little chat with Tom. I know Nathan was raring to get there about armor on the mechs.
Whoa. Well, I hate to really make everyone sad here, but unlike cool mimers or exploding, not exploding stuff, armor's armor at the end of the day. I hate to break it to you, but it's ablative several layers. It's just physical barriers to terrains. It's the same thing as tanks have currently. It's the same thing that, you know, it's unfortunately you can't make it much cooler until you get to stuff like ferrofibrous armor,
yeah,
which is pretty cool, which is we're going to talk about now, because the other types of armor, they don't turn up till later, so we'll get onto them at some other point. You know, you got your ballistic reinforced, you got your laser reflective,
oh, yeah,
you got your hardened armor, all of these different crap, right? Perfect. The only one that's probably going to turn up before 3050 is ferrofibrous, which is normal armor. So all it is basically is just two layers of normal armor with a protective bit of diamond weave,
ooh,
in the middle. So for some reason, I don't know why, but it increases your protection by 12%.
It sounds a believable number if you had diamonds.
Yeah, I'm sorry that this is. Yeah, I'll be honest. This is
what I have in general.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned like ablative layers for, you know, armor and things like that.
Yeah.
Why don't they just like stack those layers? Like just have like the absolute most like layered up armor possible on them.
Yeah, they do.
Have him as like the thickest. They do.
Yeah, some mechs are more heavily armored than others. But
why
not because
all of them armored the same?
No, they all have different levels of armor.
It's...
And the amount of armor that they can take is directly dependent on how big the chassis is. So I think just laws of thermodynamics and also just game balance means that there's a limited amount of armor that you can put on any tonnage of mech.
Yeah, that's...
So
I was going to say as well, they've got, it depends on the mechs as well. Some of them have got more armor on the front and the back, so that they can, yeah, vary that as well. But also, I think a lot of the armor is designed to be a little bit more generic because they know this is going to get damaged and broken. So that I think some of the armors are obviously designed so that you can just get armor to replace damaged armor on your mechs. I don't think a lot of it's kind of super proprietary.
Well,
right.
There is actually a bunch of people that make armor, but, you know, like everyone, I think by not proprietary, it just is everyone makes it.
Yeah.
So going through, you've got like, oh, Barcella Beta makes quite a few. Trailshire makes loads. Callum Industries, Krupp Armament Works makes some. I'm trying to think of ones that you might have heard of. Krupp, obviously, still exists. Krupp Steel.
Yeah.
And then, I don't think they make, we're going to talk about this a bit later, but there are actually organizations that still exist in Battletech.
Yeah.
So I won't spoil them.
Cool. Yeah. That's pretty much our little mech. So we've got our little.
I'm so sorry that I couldn't give you a more interesting.
No, it's
thing about armor than its armor.
So we've got our little Meccano skeleton. It's got its mousse glaze. It's got its engine. It's got its engine. It's got its radiators. Its heat sinks. It's got its gyro to keep it balanced with its mech warrior, its helmet on. And now we've topped it off with a little bit of armor, and that's pretty much what a mech
wow,
is.
Wow!
Really.
There you go. That's a mech. Battle.
That's a mech, baby.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the end of the main segment. We're going to have a little break, and then we're going to come back with a brand new segment, guys, which is going to be Mech of the Week. So we'll catch you guys on the flip side.
Lewis, that was so funny.
That was really funny, Lewis.
I'm so funny. I'm so sad that you guys missed out on that joke because you just come back from my break. But yeah, we're talking about Mech of the Week, and this week it is the Mackie. So the Mackie is the first battle mech. So basically, we're kind of leaving off from our story from before. 100 years after the first industrial mechs were kicked out, the military would decide to make in secret some battle mechs. This mech was kicked out in 2439. It'd been developed in secret by the Terran hegemony. The mech would be 100 tons battlefield behemoth.
What does it look like?
It looks, well, I suppose you can't see it, Dom, but
I'll put it in the chat.
Yeah, but Nathan might have a picture popped up. I'll put a picture in the notes as well. It kind of just looks like a little cylinder with two little guns, and it's got
a picture of it. Why has it got a belly button gun?
They used to be a lot lower. They've made that a bit more PG friendly by raising that up. But yeah,
had a green cannon. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Wait, so
okay, 0 out of 10. I've raised the mech.
Yeah. So anyway, so apart from its stick cannons, I'm sure you guys can have a quick look at what a Mackie is if you're not watching it on YouTube, or you've probably already seen one. The mech was tested at the Yakima Firing Center in Washington on Terra, where Colonel Charles Kincaid was pitted against 4 drone Merkav heavy tanks, and it absolutely destroyed them. This mech has been dominating the battlefields of the SLDF era up until about the Amara Civil War. It wasn't used a huge amount shortly after its kind of introduction, because mechs started to come out that kind of replaced it, but it was still kind of used more by the SLDF and their militias. And after the kind of American Civil War, we kind of see it starting to disappear, and a lot of the mechs kind of just kind of get worn out. And by the kind of era that we're in now, like 3025, most of them are gone, all museum pieces. Out of character, we do start to see these mechs appearing back in the Blakist era, because basically looking for anything at all at that point on two legs to kind of carry on. A bit of fun trivia is we do see one of these Mackies we use from the museum to work in a defensive action. But yeah, that's pretty cool. There's not a lot more really for the Mackie. It's kind of like a. It's the Brackett's original mech, but it's more kind of like it was kind of introduced later on and then kind of retconned to be the original mech. So yeah, so Nathan, can you tell us some specs of this mech?
Well, I'm about to go through the MSK 6S, which is the most common variant you'll see walking about for the most part. If you see any walking about, seeing that most of the time they're in a museum.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is kind of like the production model. It's a 100-ton assault mech. So, you know, plenty of mech to work with for the first one.
Yeah.
It's on a Ford Super Heavy HQW A3X chassis. And yes, it is that Ford.
Yeah.
Car one.
Yes.
John Ford, the guy I used to work with.
Yes.
That guy.
He's got a mech now.
Yeah.
Just as a very quick side note, we didn't really talk about organizations and companies in Battletech, but Dom, you probably won't know this because why would you? A lot of companies that exist today still exist in Battletech.
Nissan for one of them.
Nissan does actually still exist. So does Boeing. They're now Boeing Interstellar, which is pretty cool. There's Krupp. They still exist. Krupp Steel. Those people. And I'm sure there are others that I am completely missing from this list that I'm looking at.
Catalyst Game Labs.
Catalyst Game Labs still obviously exist. Yeah, there's loads. To be fair, there's so many.
It's got a Hermes 360 engine, letting it travel up to 56 kilometers per hour, which in normal person money is about 30 miles per hour, give or take, 30, 40 miles per hour.
It's not very fast when you say it like that.
Exactly. You won't get done by the cameras if you go down a dual carriageway, but, you know, it still beats foot infantry. Sorry guys, I need to say that me telling you to run a like two-story tall 100-ton battle mech down a road is not legal, guys. You will get flashbulb because I'll go, what the fuck is running down the road at the moment? Yeah, in game that is 5 hexes of movement, which is quite a lot. Obviously, it's a lot of movement, guys, isn't it?
I'd still be scared if that was coming towards me at 30 miles an hour.
Yeah,
man, that's crazy. Yep.
Main.
I'm also scared of tiny spiders.
I'm scared of lots of things, to be honest.
The main armaments it has is a PPC, an autocannon 10, which they both do the same damage. 10, 2 medium lasers.
Not on the dick. Not on the dick anymore, apparently.
Sadly, not on the dick. Not on the nipples, either. No. They went right for the little tummy. Stick 2 medium lasers there. Everyone's
game feels very, like, male in terms of its...
Wait until we get back to the penetrator.
Oh, that's going to be back of the week at some point.
But yeah. It's
then, it's got 15 heat sinks to absorb all that heat from the PPCs and 1 medium laser, because if you fire the other one, you'll get very warm. Yeah. And that all comes into a neat package of 1,461 BV in BV2, or in the money of the world, 8,654,000 C-bills.
Well, Nathan, that does sound like a neat package.
Yeah, and I think, does that convert to, is it 8 C-bills per dollar or something like now equivalent to? So
it's about $1 million.
Yeah, that's not too bad, which really.
Pretty cheap.
Incredibly cheap for a 2-story tall war machine.
Yeah.
I don't know if, but I think it obviously doesn't scale. So that doesn't say if it's like when it was brand new or when it's a museum piece.
I also think that we've got to look at this was $8 million. This was $1 million in the 80s. Inflation hit hard. We're probably up to about $30 million.
Yeah, that's probably that's
used mech salesmen that.
Oh, they definitely are. They definitely are. Yeah.
2 seconds. We'll keep going with this. When was BattleTech made? 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone, stop the podcast. We need to do some conversion work.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah.
So it's $3.8 million, which is still really cheap.
Still very cheap.
I'd buy that for $3 million. $4 million.
All I can imagine now is Mr. Beast in a machine.
Is today we're going to destroy the Draconis Combine with my mech.
Today. We're going to blow up some orphanages.
I think
you're some blind people of blindness by exploding them with big guns.
I think it does destroy the Draconis Combine, and then I think does it step on some of the captain generals as well.
It's used against the Drax. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's some nasty stuff, but anyway, so that's a standard variant. However, there are some more variants, and do you know anything about these, Tom?
Well, Lewis, it's almost as if I'm here to talk about them. Thank you. So we have, first one, the MSK-5S, which is the original one. When they were kind of putting it together, they were like, ugh, what are we going to do? So this is the one that Charles Kincaid used against the Merkava tanks. It does have more armor. However, this is primitive armor, right, so it's less protective than normal.
It's monkey armor, Tom, isn't it? It's made of bananas.
It's monkey armor, yeah. It's returned to monkey armor, so it's less protection than the overall variant. Also, the AC-10 is swapped for an AC-5 in this variant, allowing it to have two more heat sinks. Overall, this is a pretty rough trade. It's not great, but somehow, I will need some help thinking about this. Somehow, it's only about 30 BV less because it's 1436.
I think it's more armor that's not as good kind of ends up being about the same. Somehow, I don't know.
Anyway,
don't worry about it,
guys. It's terrible. Don't be Charles Kincaid. Except to be fair, there were no other battle mechs, so do be Charles Kincaid.
Yeah.
One that I do like a lot more is the MSK-7A, which does the best thing, which is swap the AC-10 for an AC-20, which does 20 damage a shot. Pretty cool. And it also changes the two medium lasers into one single large dick laser.
Oh, yeah.
And adds heat sinks so that it now has 21. And Lewis has put on the sheet pretty brutal.
It's pretty brutal. Which I wouldn't be that scared of that.
For 1900 BV, that's a steal.
It's going to come to you slowly, but when it gets there, it's going to cause a mess.
Dude, it's going to. So, and then we have the MSK-9H, which is probably the most recent version. I think this is a militia variant in the Blakist era.
I think it might be the 8B is the militia. I think it's the 8B is the newest one. I think the 8, okay. 8, it's weird that the numbers go, it's the weird, sometimes the numbers go back down and then back up. It's weird. But yeah, basically.
Either way, this is packing two PPCs, an AC-20, and two medium lasers. It's also got 20 heat sinks to help with all that heat, a Beagle active probe, which is useless, and case for when you inevitably get ammo crit. And that comes in at 2022 BV, which is an absolute steal, in my opinion.
Especially for that Beagle active probe, we love that.
A BAP. We love BAPs on this podcast.
Cool.
And then there's the MSK-8B, which is just kind of I think it's just talked about in lore. I don't necessarily think it's got a record sheet. It's a more modern take on the 9H, so it's got equivalent modern weapons. So I'm guessing medium lasers go to pulse, PPCs go to ER-PPCs. They do the right thing, which is they remove the Beagle active probe because it's useless. And then they... I'm getting some information from a man on the inside. They add a heatsink and a half a ton of armor is removed because, of course, it is. And this comes in at 2019 BV, which is the information I just received. I think into the studio. So this is, I don't know. I think the 9H and the 8B definitely kind of occupy a similar position. They're both all right, to be fair.
That's the position it's in.
So
I think
the only good one is the 7A. That's it.
Okay, so
7A or the 9H.
I was about to say, well, let's have your thoughts on the Mackie then. So you like the 9H and the 8B then, Tom?
Yeah, I think I'd need to look at what the equivalent weapons for modern weapons are, because if it's just ER-PPCs, they're terrible. I'm sorry, guys. ER-PPCs are terrible. 50% more heat for, like, no more damage. What are you doing?
I think
get your head in the game, guys.
Unless you're a cloner.
I think the 8B, it's not got ER-PPCs. I think it's just got. I think the 9H is the older one, and the 8B is the same mech, but it uses the equivalent new version of that gun. So it's still a PPC, but it's like a newer, like someone else's version of a PPC from the newer era.
Lewis, are you telling me it's not a Series Smasher PPC?
It possibly is not.
Whoa, that's crazy. Why don't I look? Oh, it's the 8B.
I think the 8B is the newer one.
Yeah, no, it's just got an AC-20 and two PPCs. I mean, to be fair, this when it says new, this was made in 2567, which is for a new.
Yeah, we were talking like 500 years ago.
It's older shit.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I'm looking at this and I'm like, it's two PPCs and a walk, and it doesn't generate any heat, the 8B. So to be fair, you know what? The 8B gets my vote.
8B. Cool. I quite like the standard Mackie, the 5S. Just for that kind of price, seems pretty solid. It's not too expensive. We could even fit it in on our mercenaries games.
Yeah, 100%.
Quite comfortably. Have you got any thoughts on it, Nathan?
I think that there are a lot more, like, it's okay for a first attempt. Everyone's first go is a bit rough, you know, they haven't mastered it yet, but there is another about anything, but especially about this Mackie, which I think compared to a lot of the mechs that came after it, assault wise, is doo-doo garbage.
Yeah.
Well, slow. Well, it's got armor. We'll give it that it's got armor, but the weaponry itself, it hasn't really got that many guns, which you can kind of expect because I don't even know if they've figured out how to mount guns properly on a mech at that point.
Well, they...
But I think it's a pretty mid mech.
Yeah, it. I quite love it. It's okay. Dom, do you have any opinions on the Mackie? Is it one you is this gonna be your first battle mech, Dom?
Well, they emasculated the Mackie by taking his entire dick off.
I think you can still get the metal models with the dick guns if you want.
Well, thank God for that.
The Hexperts podcast do support dick guns, which will become more prevalent when we start talking about the Penetrator, which I am going to talk about at some point.
Yes.
To me, I'm giving it a 6. I think it's like the most kind of inoffensive, middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have, it's the first, right? So that's important. Being the first of something is a relevant point.
Yeah.
But looking at it from today's viewpoint, I'm pretty unimpressed.
It's like Lord of the Rings.
Please
elaborate.
No, I'm not going to elaborate.
Okay, just leave it there, Tom. If you want, it's like,
yeah. I mean, it is well known that I have bad takes.
So just leave it there, Tom. So apparently, the expert's opinion is the Mackie is like Lord of the Rings. That's all that we say.
It's good for the first one, but there have been better.
Tom's a Hunt for Gollum fan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you feel like the Lord of the Rings of battle mechs, the Mackie you can get in the proliferation cycle with a bunch of the first mechs from the other great houses. It's quite a cool little box, really, and it's got the first Omni mech in there. It's also got it's got a code for a book, I think, that still works, so you can get yourself a bunch of stories about where the first mechs come from if you're into that. But definitely a box, I think it's worth picking up. I still need to paint my Mackie up from mine. I don't know if you guys have touched yours yet.
No, I haven't got one.
Oh, I've licked mine.
You've licked yours. Yeah. I think I've looked at it, but I haven't got around to painting it. It doesn't generally kind of fit in some of the forces I was doing, but I think he might make a return now, especially with the Mercs campaign. I think you can't not have a Mackie around at that kind of price.
Definitely, definitely.
Cool.
I would very much rather have a King Crab.
You don't get many King Crabs at 1400 PV.
Yeah, but 400 points more for like a lot better of a mech. Yes, please.
I don't know.
But yeah, out of a lettered rating system from S to F, where are we putting this? I think D.
C.
I think it's a C. It's probably a C. I think it's a solid mech of all time.
It's a solid passing grade.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Cool. Well, if that's everything we can say about the Mackie, we'll catch you guys in the outro. So, see you on the flip side. Go. And we're back for the outro, guys.
Breaking news! I've been doing some reading in the 7-year break that we had between those two sections.
I thought you couldn't read. Did you learn to read as well?
I did actually go to school and get a degree and all that stuff. Turns out the Eiffel Tower, the Tour d'Eiffel, was bought by and relocated to Japan in 2289, which means that there is no longer anything in France worth seeing.
Oh, dear.
Cool. They put it right next to the Tokyo Tower, so they had, like, you know, the Twin Towers.
Nathan...
Is that Lord of the Rings reference?
That is. I also have some other terrible news. Houston in America, St. Louis in America, and Riga in Estonia were all destroyed by by nuclear attacks in 3068 during the jihad. So, if you live in those cities,
do you mean the Blakist era, Tom? I don't know what this naughty word is.
Have a problem.
Wait, I've got a question. So when you said Riga, I know where Riga is. It's in Latvia.
Okay.
It's in Estonia. Are you saying there was some kind of war between Latvia and Estonia?
No, Dom, what that means is my degree is not in geography. I'm just an idiot and I just went, it's in the Baltics somewhere.
Well, it looks like we've lost our Baltic viewers.
Well, we've lost our Latvian viewers.
If you are
Latvian, I have some very bad news. In just 1,000 years, you are going to get blown up by nuclear bombs.
Mm-hmm. If you're Latvian and didn't like that, send us hate comments in the comments section. Send this to all your Latvian friends so they can also come over here, interact with the video, and leave comments and give us views.
Please leave them in Latvian, though, because I will read them.
Please dislike, comment,
and subscribe for more.
Yeah, okay. Let's try and get back on track. As I was just saying, let's not start with. Doesn't have to be hate comments, but yes, obviously. Thanks for listening to the episode. As the guys are trying to insinuate, please like, follow, subscribe, share. Anything you can do to spread the podcast. Obviously,
put us on Reddit.
Your friends about us more than anything. Just talk to your friends and say, hey, you listen to this cool podcast called The Hexperts. We are a BattleTech podcast. Chances are, if they're a BattleTech fan, they'll enjoy conversations about BattleTech.
And
even if they're not.
Tell your mom and dad, tell your grandparents to listen as well. I'm sure.
Otherwise, your dog.
What on earth are you doing listening to us if you don't like BattleTech?
Yeah, get your Ouija board out and tell your grandparents.
Okay, yeah, and obviously, it'll be in the show. It's in the notes, but obviously, if you do want to get in contact with us, there is the Hexperts Helpline at gmail.com or Instagram is Hexperts_BattleTech_podcast. And next week, I think we're going to be talking through mech weapons and equipment. Hopefully, there's nothing too crazy that comes along that derails that. I'd like to just cover what a mech is before we get to double digits, at least.
Oh, I'm going to derail. I've already got derailing.
Please don't derail. Ready. Please don't derail.
You motherfucker.
All right. Well, if that's everything, then we can just say goodbye to you guys. Maybe this time Dom can actually use his catchphrase at the right time in the podcast. All right, guys. Well, I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Say la.
See you next week.
He's done it. Yay!